Hello and welcome to Did I Save Podcast. It is a podcast about the way games change and the way games change us.
Beautifully said.
Today's episode.
I'm gonna steal that.
Today's episode is gonna be about world design. And to discuss this topic, I brought along two people. I brought along Jared.
You didn't bring me, I volunteered.
Okay. And I brought along Taylan.
Hello.
And then I brought myself. My name's Ryan.
Perfect.
Hey, Ryan.
And hey, Ryan. We're discussing world design or level design. Mm-hmm. When I first pitched it, I was like, level design. Just thinking about the way game developers create their worlds.
The geometry of a world.
And does that world allow you to explore it in a way that's fun? Mm-hmm. Is it mm-hmm. interesting to explore? Does it reward you for exploring in a way that feels rewarding? Mm-hmm. Or is it just bad? Mm. But
is it memorable?
We want to talk about highlights, but I'm sure along the way we're going to talk about some bad level design for comparable reasons.
We try not to get too much in the weeds, but I just want to clarify up front that when I'm thinking about this, I use the term worlds to describe a game where I'm talking about holistically the world itself, the characters in that world, the way the narrative takes you through that world, like as an entire experience. What does it all feel like when it comes together? That's like a world to me. And so this episode, I specifically focused on the layout of
like
this
world. More of a world building sense?
In a sense, absolutely. And it's about, like, does it direct me in the way that it needs to? Mm-hmm. Does it communicate clearly without being obvious what I need to do next, how I need to move forward? Is it memorable to be in this world? Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, it's like, does it facilitate the gameplay that the game wants me to pursue? Like, mm-hmm. does it complement the way that the game's combat or action is designed?
Maybe about how well it immerses you.
It's definitely going to be significantly more immersive if it does its job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is there to facilitate the verbs that you're given mm-hmm. and the story that you're
And this is told. Where you and I just have different personalities. I'm talking about just like, is it fun?
I think that's what it, I mean, to be fair, that's what it boils down to. It's like at the end of the end goal of all those big words is, mm-hmm. does it make the game fun. More fun or and, does it make the game less fun?
Yeah.
Does it work against itself or does it complement itself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clarify because we will probably do an episode in the future about worlds, about the best worlds, the mm-hmm. best places to submerge yourself
the
in.
The most immersive. Right.
Immersive.
Not submersive.
Well, I want to submerge myself in the world and feel immersed in its fiction.
Nice. What about you, Taylan?
You know, when you said, I want to talk about level design, mm-hmm. world design, I don't pay attention to it that often.
Okay.
I don't think I do as much as I should, which is why this was really hard for me.
I know you do specifically. Because, and I don't know if that's just because.
And are we talking about multiplayer maps? Does anybody have multiplayer
maps? I have multiplayer maps.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just a solid map level, you know, mm-hmm. but it's clear and concise. But I don't know if it's because of your artistic background that you pay attention to.
I think it is.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I like to create.
Because I don't really notice a level. Unless it's just that good
mm-hmm. or that bad.
Or it's just that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Or, because I can play games. Makes sense. Usually I'm like, you know, it's just like, I don't think it's that great, but I don't really. It's just like, It's just like.
Yeah.
It's doing what it's supposed to, which is guide
it's
me through
to.
It without being obvious about it.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're noticing it, it's either doing something very good or
very
bad.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's crazy how much we kind of almost take that for granted, mm-hmm. where it's like, if you don't pay attention to it, and it's just kind of like, you're just moving throughout the world. Mm-hmm. But then when it's really good, it hits really well. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You're like, wow, this is fun to move throughout this world. Mm-hmm. But I think you pay attention to it a lot more.
Yeah.
Because you've brought it up in conversations prior mm-hmm. where you're just like, man, I like the way this is interconnected, or I like this specifically about the level. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, cool.
Yeah.
Power on, man.
Yeah.
So, but then when you brought it up, I was just like, I was like, what games do I go back to that have really solid level design?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we'll start with Jarrett. if you want to give your number one pick.
So I think I have one that kind of exemplifies exactly what I'm thinking of when I think about a good map. But it's kind of the whole world itself, how it's laid out, is Half-Life 2.
That's an excellent.
It is. I went back and played it just to make sure that I wasn't misremembering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is truly incredible what an amazing balance this game manages to strike between directing you in the way that you need to go without, you know, using like an arrow or bright colors or whatever. Like, it is so subtle and organic in the way that it moves you through the world while also not making it feel so narrow and so focused that you feel like you're on rails.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you go off the beaten path, instead of hitting a dead end, you find something unique and interesting.
Yeah.
The last night I was playing a level and I saw that there was like a sewer grate that was like cracked open, but it was elevated. So I stack a bunch of stuff up. I jump in there and I move through it and it's like damaging me because I'm in like sewage.
Hmm.
Like, don't go this way. But I'm like, well, it wouldn't be open if there wasn't something. Mm-hmm. So I keep going. And then you take a right turn and there's like an alien vibing by a campfire and he's like singing to himself.
Yeah, I remember that.
And there, and yeah. I was like, there's always just some little weird thing that fits in the universe that makes it feel more alive and more real. With it never punishes you for being curious.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you're ready to move on, it is always very clear about how you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the first games that ever had... basically, I just think that game strikes a really great balance between making it feel alive and real and lived in and rewarding you for being curious about it. But also... Oh, that's what I was saying. One of the great things about this game is it was one of the first games to really commit itself to using the physics engine for more than just looking cool.
Yes.
And I remember when this game came out, like, this game is the thing that launched Steam.
Mm-hmm.
You had to download
Steam. It's the first thing I did when I got my Steam account.
Right? Like, yeah. And I remember, like, my neighbor was downloading this. He got it for Christmas, but he couldn't play it without downloading Steam first. So at 28K a second, and everybody else is doing this because everybody else got Half-Life 2 for Christmas and they want to play it. And I remember it took like a full day for us just to download the client for this. And by the time we had such a bad taste in our mouths by the time we actually played it, and it still blew us away. Like, we were ready to be mad at this game and it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And there's eventually you get a gravity gun that allows you to manipulate anything that's not alive, basically.
Yeah.
And it dedicates a whole level. This game does a great thing that Zelda does where, like, every time you're in a particular dungeon, you get a new item. The dungeon is designed to teach you all the different ways you can use that item. And you take it out and you use it. And this game does that same thing. Every time you get a new weapon, it gives you lots of opportunities to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And especially with the gravity gun, you end up in this town where this one dude is the only person left alive, and he has set up traps throughout the whole town to kill all these people who've been like basically possessed by these little alien creatures.
The
head crabs. And so you have to like be super it definitely does. So the whole environment is designed around manipulating physics, and it is such a memorable level in particular because
using those saws
the whole time. Yeah, there's like saw blades stuck in the wall that you're like yanking out, and it feels so good in this game to manipulate all of this stuff. And it was so fun to tinker with, and it only gets that is a game that just continually amps up.
I think in that, certain section of the game, you don't have guns. I can't remember exactly why.
You can use them if you want. I replayed it last night, but why? I
remember using the gravity gun so much in that scenario, and it was just so satisfying.
Yeah. It is.
How, really how much have you played of Half-Life 2, Taylor?
I've never beat Half-Life 2.
You never beaten it? Mm-mm. Okay. For some reason, I was thinking you had a limited experience.
It's really good.
I've beaten it like 3 times, and every time I find new things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went back expecting it to feel pretty dated.
Yeah.
And there are some elements of it that feel a little dated, but overall,
it's a blast.
That game just blew me away.
Yeah.
It's good. It's great.
A big part of it is it feels so good to explore.
I need a VR system to play the new one.
Mm-hmm. Alex.
But, man, those reviews are crazy good.
Yeah.
I've purposefully not spoiled that
yourself. Yeah, I don't pay any attention to it because I saw a video of someone like the gloves that you can get for VR. They were like picking up individual objects and like playing catch with them and stuff.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't want to know anything else about this game. I'm going to play it.
Yeah. Totally. It's going to be a blast. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to get a VR set for my laptop.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Let me know. Incredible. We'll definitely record some fun stuff with that for the podcast.
Yeah.
Taylor, what's your number one?
Good question.
That can't be your answer.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead.
Let me look at it.
No, 4 weeks.
I did. Yeah. So
he's pulling a Ryan. He's pulling a Ryan. Look at him.
No, I mean, I've got notes, man. So my biggest thing for solid level design is, can you traverse the level in a fun and meaningful way?
That's a big one for me too.
Mm-hmm. Because if it's not fun to move around the level, like if the level itself is interesting, but it's mm-hmm. not fun to explore the level, mm-hmm. that to me is frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Which, if you heard my take on Midnight Sun's world, you'll know I like to have a fun way to traverse.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And for me, I have a good example and I have a bad example.
Oh, nice.
And mine is the 2013 reboot of Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm. Good or bad?
Good.
Good.
Sorry, I should have prefaced.
Is that the first one that, like, felt real serious?
Right. Yeah. This is the new serious.
My friend Andrew plays that game a lot.
Yes.
It was on my
comfort game list. Yeah. I never said it, but it was. Yeah. But I love going back to this game, and it's just fun to be able to explore, and it's more like open levels, which mm-hmm. I really appreciate.
I like that
mm-hmm. more than open world. I'd rather mm-hmm. just have like a big level and you can explore those nooks and crannies.
The old games were more in the design philosophy of like Resident Evil, mm-hmm. and the new ones are much more like Uncharted.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
100%.
I think it does a better job than Uncharted.
I agree. I think the traversal
in terms of actually interacting with the world and feeling like you're engaging with
something.
I've watched Andrew
play quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
It looks really cool. I personally have not played it, but like I said, I've heard nothing but good things. So
I really enjoy it, because it's like,
because the traversal in there, it feels epic,
and
your suspense is through the roof.
Yeah,
and one thing, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, and one thing that's nice is that, well, you did mention when you were talking about earlier is that everything that you can like grab onto is kind of, it's not like color coded, but it's
not
like,
obvious like other games.
But it's like withered wood.
Yeah,
or there's rocky, craggy cliffs.
They don't paint it yellow.
It's barely, clearly, visually different to mm-hmm. where you know you can interact with it without being so like obtuse. Where
looking
you're
like it
I don't
was,
even know. Yeah, or
it's natural.
It's natural.
It's
looks
like
natural.
A three-dimensional arrow just pointing to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but it's not like bright red where you're like, oh, okay, this is clearly where I'm supposed to go.
Or
there's
like
different
how,
ways to get to where you're supposed to go, yeah, but you mm-hmm. can. You know, there's like a decrepit plane and you can like interact with that, and it's just, it's enjoyable. But I always remember just there's like these cliffs and there's like all these rope lines that you can either usually you have like a kind of like a basically like a pickaxe
mm-hmm.
and you can swing onto mm-hmm. it.
It's a climbing hook thing,
right? Exactly. Yeah. So but I just remember playing in that level, just literally jumping off the highest point
mm-hmm.
and just falling. And then just barely hooking the line at the last minute and then zipping all the way back up mm-hmm. to the top and then keep jumping.
I think that's like, the big thing is like it doesn't feel so scripted in the sense that like you can't use this unless you stood up there and you hit the prompt whenever the button popped up. It's like if you're near it contextually,
you can grab
we'll let you
too.
Do it. So you're like makes the world feel much more connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's makes it way more satisfying to interact with stuff and to explore in general. Like you might not know if you can get there, but you feel like you have a lot more tools to try.
Right.
And I think that's way more satisfying.
And it tackles female protagonist in a way that you didn't expect a Tomb Raider game to.
Right. I agree.
You mean extremely gory?
And unpleasant
to
watch. If you miss the line, you're...
Yeah, that game got... I mean, I'll say it got a lot of attention. I don't know if it was positive or negative for just how grisly a lot of those deaths are
mm-hmm. yeah,
to the point where it almost feels like a little flagrant where it's like,
mm-hmm. I forgot about
isn't
that.
It cool just how like she's getting ground up. Mm-hmm. Watch it all.
Right.
We're not cutting away.
Yeah.
Like the Meat Man game.
Meat Boy?
Meat Boy.
Yeah. Just leave a bloody trail and everything as you're jumping.
But this game, just it's just, I remember, because it came out in 2013. So
yeah, which is
23 at the time.
They've done a remastered. It's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. It looks great. Yeah, it does. But I just remember, like I said, you know, jumping off the cliffs and climbing up. And I just remember going back and doing it. I'm not even, like, completing the level. Mm-hmm. I'm just having fun doing that.
Yeah.
And it's like, it almost takes you back to when you were like a kid and just like enjoying having fun in the level without actually doing anything. But also it's like, you know, you can craft and stuff and they have like little boxes, but they also stand out from the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And where it's not like so obtuse where it's just like, you know, here's this bright, like just like the Rocky Crags. It's just a regular box, but you can interact
with it. Has that thing where the pickable items like flash, like a Resident Evil game.
Like shimmer.
Yeah.
Right. Like yeah. But then you go to Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and they had a different
team.
Different team.
This is your bad.
This is the bad.
Is this the sequel?
It's amazing that you can be like, the good example is this game.
Yeah.
The bad example is the sequel to this game.
That's interesting.
That really sucks.
So, because in the first one, you're getting lost because you're enjoying the exploration.
Mm-hmm.
In the third game, the second game is just kind of like meh. But the third game,
I was going to ask what your opinion of that.
Yeah. It's okay.
That's fine.
But the third game is you're getting lost because you don't know where the F to go.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, you don't know where you're going. Everything just, all of the vegetation just blends in with the rest of the, so you don't know if you can interact with anything at all.
Hmm.
And there's like, nothing makes sense. Like, you could swing on tree branches in the first one because it makes, there's like a tree. And it's like, I could probably grab onto it. And you do, and then you can swing. And next, in the third one, it's like, makeshift metal. I don't know. It just doesn't. It doesn't make sense narratively. Like, why is this random metal bar in a tree? You know, I don't know. It's like they just wanted to focus on like stealth kills and stuff rather than making the world cohesive and make sense.
It feels like from a world building standpoint, they cut too many corners in terms of design.
Yeah, everything was like more linear, but it was also confusing to navigate. You didn't want to explore. You just wanted it to be over. It just didn't have the traversal, like the grittiness of the first one, which it was a big disappointment for me.
Yeah.
So
that's a shame. It's a shame that such a high point got a follow up that's such a low point.
Yes.
That they just fundamentally misunderstood what made that game so good.
Yeah.
That's a shame. What's your number one?
Well, when I went to think about, stall. When I went to think about Open World, when I was a kid, it would have been like, I would have just, my whole list would have been open world games.
Mm-hmm.
And as I get older, I more appreciate linear.
The attention to detail.
They can finally craft these things. And talking about bad examples, Oblivion. It's boring.
I can tell you, I could probably do a whole podcast on what I don't like
about everything Oblivion else about design. That game carries the game for it.
Yeah.
But the world, so bland and boring.
It's recycled too. Like, there's two-tone. So many elements that you see over and over again.
Like Morrowind, at least like you're always like finding interesting things.
Well,
like
that's interesting. So I was actually watching a video yesterday on YouTube about that. I was watching a video yesterday on YouTube that was saying that Morrowind was the last game that team made in the Elder Scrolls series before they could automate game like level design. Mm-hmm. So the entire world of Morrowind is literally, someone had to think to put the thing there.
And you can definitely see that.
Yeah, I feel like that's so true.
Yeah. But I want to talk about Untitled Goose Game.
Okay.
Wow.
That's an excellent example.
Yeah. Such good level design.
I don't know how I didn't think of that. I literally just watched a playthrough of that game recently, and I was this game is so smart.
It's so smart. It feels like the difference between American humor and British humor, it feels like the difference between an American game and a British game. But it's an Australian company.
Oh, okay.
And it's the same company that's making that Big Walk game.
Okay.
That you shared with me.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about. It comes out in 2025.
Really cool,
Just be patient. Hopefully it comes out in 2025.
Yeah, seriously.
And it looks like a great one for when I get my VR stuff.
That's plenty of time to save up?
Yeah, right. But Untitled Goose Game, have you played it?
I have.
Okay. I got it right when they unleashed the co-op. As soon as I heard they had got a co-op mode released, I bought it for me and Halo.
I did not know they had a co-op.
Yeah, free update.
That's awesome. Yeah, free update. Cool. It's been out for quite a while, several years.
Because Ren and I have played it together. So,
Oh, you played it together with single player?
Yeah, Ren and I just played it, but we didn't. I didn't know there was a really co-op good. Part.
Yeah. Okay. I just talked to my little brother Dawson about it, and he had no idea this game existed. And I was like, we've never talked about.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Because I was talking about this podcast and stuff I was going to talk about. And I was asking him what his thoughts on level design as things were. And I was like, Untitled Goose Game. And I just assumed he had played it and loved it. And he was like, what is that? And I was like, oh, man I get wild. To do this. I get to tell you about this. Him and Allison.
Not even that. Like, sit down.
Yeah.
Sit down. Take the controller.
Him and his wife, Allison, started playing it and they loved it and they beat it in a day.
Yeah. Which I was like, that's awesome. That seems like perfect for them, too. Yeah. Like, they seem like the exact couple that would just... The type of like charming chaos that game emanates all the time.
And the American version of this, if we're calling this like the British version, is Goat Simulator.
You're right that like it's Goat Simulator is so much more bombastic and like
high energy,
is, like, very subdued. Very
great,
like,
music.
The the way that people get mad at you, like the no matter what you do to torment them, it's just like to quietly.
It's a ghost.
Up in the air and be like, and then at the end of the game, when you find out that like you do this every day,
and then to
think back to the people being like, not again, to you for the 100th time destroying his garden is just so funny,
too. So funny.
The humor is huge.
You play as geese, and if you're, you can just play a single player, and you play as a goose. But and you have like a few buttons, like one to lower your neck,
right?
So you can pick things up on the ground, and can you
reach? The animations are so good.
You can honk, which is a thing you need to use quite often in the game.
It's great for scaring people.
Oh, so good.
It's really good.
And the co-opness adds a lot of strategy to it, where you can like distract people and then the other goose can come up behind and like grab the keys, and it makes a lot of things easier. I think you're going to beat it a lot quicker in co-op, but it makes it more fun at the same time.
Yeah. I think the speed run for that game in co-op is like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you know what you're doing,
I'm actually surprised it's that long.
It's I would say maybe an hour and a half or so, but the game is just so it's really like the world itself is the puzzle, right? Like everything is kind of static in the sense that like everything has a designated place, even though you can pick stuff up and move it and stuff, but picking stuff up and moving it is the goal because you're trying to distract people or you're trying to take things from them to use somewhere else. And so it's really, I call them clockwork worlds, where like the world is designed in such a way that everything is put in a very intentional place. And then they just step back and say like, okay, the clock works. Everything's ticking. All the gears are in motion. Now you go in there and just start pulling gears out and see what happens. You know what I mean? It's like so interesting.
It's a game that rewards experimentation with the level design.
Right.
There's not like a lot of secrets, like areas to go to. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there's a lot of things that you didn't think you could interact with that you can.
And
not necessarily secret areas and stuff, but a lot of Easter eggs.
A lot of Easter eggs where that you scare, you end up making that kid so scared of you and he runs in that phone booth and won't come out.
It's really good.
And the garage door that you lock that person in.
Yeah.
And they turn around just in time to see it coming out. And you see them before it closes. They're like, whoa!
As you're just honking.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a clever game. And the design, the flow of the world. It's like almost circular. I mean, it is a circular world, but it's crazy how circular it feels.
It's crazy that it is circular. Yeah. Because when you realize that it's circular, you're like, because at the end you have to run back through the entire world and get back to where you were, and you're like, I can't believe this was so small. Because by the time you get to the end, you feel like you've done so much. How could it possibly be that small? But it's just a one little town.
But you can spend your time in that game and have fun. You don't have to progress through it
Right.
Oh, you could like experiment to see different ways to mess with these people.
I think the game very much wants you to take your time and just goof around.
And it's just like goose not around. A stressful game.
Goose around. Around. Cut, do a retake. That's
you really don't need to chicken out on these puns.
Is it my turn yet?
That's right.
But it's clever. It's witty. Right. It's so well designed.
A lot of the clever wit comes from the map, like comes from the world itself. That's what I think is so
Yeah.
Yes. So good about that.
And the characters.
You could see why if it wasn't designed the way it was, it would not
work. Oh, no.
No, not at all.
And the music in the game.
That game could be so boring.
The music is one continuous track that changes depending on what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
It just feels like there's a guy somewhere playing a piano watching you play. And it's amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. That's
there may be.
Yeah.
He's very tired.
Yeah.
Let him rest.
But yeah. Great game.
That is a great game.
It's like $20. Fantastic. It's not on sale.
Yeah.
And it's on every system.
Is my brother. Is it on Game Pass though? Because that's how I think that's how Ren and I downloaded it.
I think it might be. Yeah.
It was at one point at least.
Yeah.
It's on Switch now. And
I did not know that.
That's where I played it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's where Dawson bought it. Yeah. Nice. That's a great system to play it on.
Yeah. Great choice.
And we'll move on to Jared.
Okay. My number two.
Oh.
My second one is something that we've talked about at length, but I'm going to try. I've tried specifically in the episodes before where we talked about it to not mention any of the stuff I wanted to say here, which is Monster Hunter Rise. A little game you guys may have heard of.
That's right.
Okay. I think we should.
We have a homie work coming out at the end of this week, I believe, that will talk about your experience with Monster Hunter Rise. And I don't want to talk about the gameplay or anything. What I want to talk about is every time I play that game, and the more I play it, is that this world has like, Monster Hunter Rise has like five different worlds. They're all different biomes, right? Different types of environments, like ice, lava, blah, 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 whatever. But all of them are pretty big.
Yeah.
And the whole world is designed to feel like an ecosystem. So everything that you need to do to upgrade your character or anything like that is you're collecting ingredients that grow in different areas. You're climbing different places. You're finding all these hidden areas that have like ore deposits so that you can mine or whatever. And everything feels like an actual environment that you can just happen. It just happens that you know a use for all the different stuff in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so interesting to see how interconnected everything is. Mm-hmm. And some of it is like stuff that you need for crafting, or some of it is stuff that you use immediately when you pick it up, like animals and stuff like that. And some stuff is like stuff that you're crafting on the go because you need it in that moment. And all the while, these animals that you're hunting are part of this ecosystem, and you see them interacting with stuff like fighting smaller animals or fighting each other for territory
or whatever,
turf wars and stuff like that. And I've never seen a world that does such a good job of making everything that you want in it, all the consumables and gatherables and collectibles that are in the world, feel like they were there for not for you, but because that's where they grow. That's why they just exist there, and you just happen to be gathering them.
Put that in my bag.
I need that skunk in my bag.
That's right.
And I think it's really, really impressive the way that they've managed to like harmonize all these different functions of like gameplay and design and communicating to the player what stuff is, all into one thing that feels like it's not even there for you.
Yeah.
It's
just there. And the complexities of the level design take a while to, which you'll hear us talk about in the homie work episode, take a while to understand. Because once you understand the use of all these items that you're grabbing,
that's a big part of it is like you're collecting stuff. You don't even know what it does.
Yeah. It's glowy. I'm going to pick it up.
Which I think makes me, it encourages me to explore, because there's also like relics spread out and other bases that you can find and build, and then you can like fast travel to that area quicker, or just seeing cool stuff.
Yeah,
like
just take an expedition mission and
you can literally, instead of doing a quest, you can just take a mission where you're just allowed to explore with no time limit.
You can still take the monsters out,
yeah,
or you can ignore them.
And there's lots of ways. Exploring it gives you such an advantage because you understand how to navigate more efficiently. You find spots where you can like slingshot yourself to different parts of the map if you have the right items to place there, and then once they're there, they're permanent. So there's so many benefits to understanding the environment, which just lends itself that much more to this idea of hunting a monster that's indigenous to this area.
Right.
Like it all works so well together, and it's such a compliment to the actual gameplay. Yeah. Like I can't think of a better example of a game just being so inclusive in its design philosophy like that. I think it's just really one of a kind in that sense.
No, I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, rare, good maps.
The rare triple agree.
I think the lava world is a little...
Undercooked.
Yeah. I can't... Taylor thought that joke was funny.
This is not a rare triple agree.
That's right.
That was dumb.
Undercook, overcook. Oh, right to jail.
Right to jail.
Straight away. Straight away. Right away. Yeah, I don't... I think that's my least favorite level.
Yeah.
But it's fine, but it's a little confusing to navigate, especially when you're looking at the mini map.
Well,
you're
the
like,
bigger problem is it's hard to navigate because there's not really any other environment.
No.
I agree that the lava world, it's difficult to traverse because.
I thought you were going to say it's undercooked.
No, I'm not going to say it's undercooked. I'll never say that.
Maybe overcooked. Huh?
Okay. Maybe. But it's just. Most of the other maps don't have any kind of like hard obstruction that you just can't go around.
Yeah.
This has so many like lava paths that you're like, well, I just can't go this way.
There's like graphic walls and stuff. Yes. You just don't see any ones. Except for the like outer exterior.
Right. If anything, it highlights to me just how well made the other maps are.
So, hey, yeah.
So, oh, yeah.
Good.
I agree.
Yeah. No segue. Taylor, go.
Taylor number two.
Number two. Dishonored.
Great choice.
Oh, yeah.
I think the level design.
I thought about that, including that.
Yeah.
Because it is a great choice.
It is. Well, I'll let you talk.
Well, no. I mean,
don't
you
do
got,
that.
You got something.
I just like it's so well thought out and it feels living and you have a mission, right?
Yeah.
And the world is so well designed that it's going to reward you for going a certain way and trying a different strategy.
Right.
And you have so much freedom in that. But
yeah,
I think they did a really good job at designing that for a character choice of how they want to tackle missions.
Exactly.
I agree. Yeah.
Plus, the traversal in that game is immaculate.
Yes.
I mean,
I put them,
so they thought of everything. Yeah. It's like you can slide or you can use your little, I don't know what it's called. Whatever you teleport. You teleport.
Yeah.
You're teleporting.
Yeah, they call it something.
Call it that.
Something, yeah. But
oh, I think they call it Shunpo. Flash step.
No.
So, but you can like no, it's like, you know, you see a ledge, there's a guard here, there's a guard there.
Uh-huh.
It's like you'll be jumping, you'll shoot this guard, and then you'll teleport right behind the other guard and just do like it's just
the mobility
seamless. The mobility
is really...
But the level rewards that mobility. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's just like if you have this
blink.
Level.
They call it blink.
Blink. There you go. But so it's like built around everything. Like they could have easily given you these crazy cool powers, but the level design doesn't complement that. Then it wouldn't have been fun to explore by any means.
Yeah. But and it doesn't feel like the world doesn't feel super intentional where they designed it to
be that way.
To be that way,
right.
Where other games do.
Exactly.
It just feels like a natural world and you have these abilities to navigate it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1,000%.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Fun fact, the guy that designed the art style for that game is the same guy that worked on Half-Life and Half-Life 2.
Oh,
it definitely shows.
Pretty obvious.
Definitely
when you
shows.
See them
yeah.
Together.
Well, now that you say that,
see it.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
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 He's got a cool way of designing.
He's got a great vibe.
The giant walker things that.
Yes.
Mm,
yeah.
Striders.
You know what? I didn't even think about that.
Striders.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, Deathloop. Came after that, which is very similar.
Oh, that's the same people?
It is, yeah.
Oh.
Arkane Studios.
If you didn't pick that up right away.
They also made Prey.
You're right, thinking about the art style in that game. It's just Deathloop leans way further into like the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
did you play it?
Mm-hmm, I played Deathloop.
How was it?
It was okay.
Yeah.
It just looked okay.
Look
I was very excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same. That's it. I'm good.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
What's your second? Third?
Someone say something while I look at my phone.
I think it is your... It's what's your number three, right?
I'm going to talk about... I want to talk about the Halo multiplayer maps.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Sorry, I just like totally did that.
Yeah,
I'll say it again.
The reason I didn't put a Halo multiplayer map on my list is because I felt like it was cheating to be like Blood Gulch, Coagulation, Zanzibar,
well, that's just what I'm talking about.
Warlock.
Like, is the Halo
so consistently excellent.
Yeah, the Halo multiplayer maps stand out in the first-person shooter genre so much. Like, there's no other first-person genre, like, first-person shooter game where I remember the names of the maps.
That's
but
so true, yeah.
Freaking Blood Gulch, Zanzibar, is it Beaver Creek?
Yes. Yeah, I forgot about Beaver Creek with only rockets is so good.
It's very popular.
Yeah.
Huh, how about that? The Valhalla, great. Guardian, yeah. Great.
I like Warlock, the one yeah. where it's got like the tower and all the paths wind.
What's the one with the spiral? Big bridge in Halo 3 with the two opposite side?
Oh, I'm not crazy about that one.
I actually like that one a lot.
Breathe into the mic and move your hands into the camera. That's right. Ryan, the agent of chaos in this episode.
Yeah. It's good.
Just tech them on
in. So what do you like about it?
They're so well designed, mm-hmm. and they're all so different. You get a lot mm-hmm. of multiplayer games where every map just feels like a reskin or something, or mm-hmm. it just feels so like thrown together. But like Zanzibar has such this crazy good balance so where good. One half the map is so different, the other half of the map is so different. But it doesn't matter what side you're on. One team can do great, one team can do great.
Yeah.
The thing is, that map, Zanzibar, I think, in particular, is an incredible example. Because if you're looking at it from, like, imagine a rectangle where the far sides mm-hmm. are to the left and the right, short sides are top and bottom. At the bottom is the little beach area that is, mm-hmm. like, shielded by a big wall, but mm-hmm. there's, like, a walking path on the top of the wall, mm-hmm. right? And so basically there's like a natural fortification here where the one team starts, so they can't be just camped. You can't just mm-hmm. shoot them as soon as they spawn because yeah. your line of sight is broken. And there's only one entrance into this area where there's a giant windmill in the middle. I don't think it's a windmill, but it moves like one. Mm-hmm. And then there's like all these small spaces that are breaking it up. So there's never like, there's so many opportunities to kind of like, I think Bungie in general does this exceptionally well, mm-hmm. that they make maps where there is always more than one vantage point to where you are. You mm-hmm. can never hide somewhere where there aren't two different areas yeah. to shoot you from. So you can't just sit in a spot and shoot anybody and then like move out of the yeah. way. When you're always vulnerable from a direction that you can't observe mm. as you are doing something mm-hmm. else. And Zanzibar, like in the back, you have like very tight, close combat. Mm-hmm. That's if you want to use the shotgun, you lure people in there and you mm-hmm. have an advantage. If you want to use the sniper, you go out into the open area. It's such an interesting mix that totally facilitates different play styles all yeah. at the same time,
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
And it is so interesting to me the way that they do that. And the first like design doc that I ever read was about how they designed their maps. And they mm-hmm. talked about like, what the first thing they do is they think about vantage points. They mm-hmm. think about never making like a closed end area. You always mm-hmm. need two access points. But then they would let people play and heat map it based on where you died. Mm-hmm. And then when you die, they have a line connecting back where the person was that killed you. Mm-hmm. And then they aggregate that data over and over again. And they get a heat map of like the darker the red, the more people died there, and then you have lines leading out to where they were killed from, and then they will look at those maps and they'll say, okay, most often people are dying here, and most often they're being killed from here. We need to design something to minimize the amount of times that people are killed here to rebalance this map. And ideally,
yeah.
it's all the same shade of red.
Yeah.
Because you don't want any one area to be particularly yeah. vulnerable.
And Zanzibar, like, you're never staying in one place. Like, you're having a great time anywhere on the map.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, the multiple vantage points and the equalization mm-hmm. of access to, like, targets, so yeah. to speak, makes it to where you have to keep moving.
Yeah.
Which means the map, the game never stalls out in a way where no one sees anybody else because everybody's yes. found their little hiding spot.
It's not too big. Not it's not too small. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect size map for 8 players, 4 players, 6 yeah. players.
I think that's important, too, because yeah. sometimes... Yeah.
How does it
especially
scale?
Newer
yeah.
games, they make the maps so large. Yeah. It's like, dude, that's not even fun because yeah. you're not doing anything.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like you're playing golf.
Yeah,
you're just playing baseball or sitting out in the outfield mm-hmm. waiting for 6 innings because you can't. Nothing's happening.
Yeah,
yeah. And the, I think
Guardian map is also another highlight for me.
Which one is?
I think I'm getting the name right. It's got a circle in the middle. It's got the gravity hammer underneath that.
Oh, it's like two tiers inside a Covenant's craft. Is that the one you're talking about?
Okay. Is it a Covenant? It's
all like, it's all purple, it like you're flood? Inside the Covenant.
There's like nature. There's like a
two tree rings. Trunk.
There's like a tree trunk.
What is the joke?
It's okay. You guys will see when you see the trivia.
There's, okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
There's a tree trunk that you can like jump off of to get into the middle of the map. Mm-hmm. And then it's just so well designed. Like it's another one that scales pretty well. I wouldn't put like 8 players on it, but six players, 4 players is great. And even like a one-on-one, it's a great one-on-one match if you're trying to prove some skills.
Sure.
But
big open area like that.
Yeah, it's got like the gravity hammer, which everyone goes for, but it's being watched by the sniper spawn as well. And it's just like a straight tunnel. But if you can get to where the gravity hammer is, you're like shielded by this like
glass wall. That's another big thing they do excellently. Yeah. Another thing that they really do well is that they manage weapon spawns by...
And the power-ups as well.
Yeah. They like to put them in high traffic areas or like low traffic areas that you, like you were saying, like the hammer might be just happen to spawn where the sniper also spawns. So you can just grab that rifle and watch that point. I think their philosophy is like, I'm sure there are lots of other games that have really good maps. Like I know of other great maps and other games, but they just are so consistently excellent in their map design. Of course, they have some that are better than others, but I think you really have to kind of tip your hat to, especially the OG Bungie team and their ability.
That's why I was excited for Destiny. I was specifically excited for their multiplayer because I was like, it's going to be the new Halo multiplayer. Yeah. And I remember playing it and not really caring for it. Yeah,
The balance of the gameplay is just so different.
Yeah.
It couldn't replace Halo, I don't think. But I was just going to say, Blood Gulch, I think, is an interesting example because when you look at it, it's just basically an oval canyon with 2 hexagonal bases in it, and that's it. There's some rocks in the way or whatever, but it does such a great job at facilitating multiple styles of play. Typically, you're playing Capture the Flag on it. So you're trying to get to the other end, but it's just a big open sniping field, basically. It's like a kill box. It's
so stressful to be out in the open because you know someone sees you with us watching you.
When no other map, like when you score that flag, you absolutely earned it.
Yeah.
Like it takes so much. It is like
such a classic like team building exercise.
It really is. But like in the walls of the canyon, there are other pathways like carved into it. Yeah. So you can take kind of a stealthier approach or you can mix and match, obviously, where you
do a big loud front
and you sneak in. Yeah, that's the thing is like it's only a haven in the middle because it's only enclosed in the middle.
Yeah.
You still have to come out the other side towards your base and be exposed.
To there, and then you have to push to the flag.
Yeah.
And then it's a race back.
Yeah.
And I think it's great.
It's great. Yeah. Man, so good.
Yeah.
Blood Gulch is great. Classic. Is it me?
It's you.
If you want.
Okay, Talon has nothing else to say about Halo. He hates
typical.
He hates Halo. Oh, okay. Let's play. All right, now we're talking. All right, that'll be the episode. No, I'm going to do my number 3. Yep. Which is Deathloop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, really?
So I'm not talking about Deathloop as a game, obviously. I'm talking about Deathloop as an example of design, of level design.
I definitely think it has great
level
design.
I don't know that another game like this even exists because it is so specific to what this game is, which is like you are this guy, basically these 8 visionaries decide to go to this island and they invent this field around the island based on some natural phenomenon that's already there. It traps them in a time loop where they relive the same day every day.
But they're aware of this.
They're all aware that they're aware that they're in a loop, but their actions never change because it's a loop. Mm-hmm. So every day you see them, they're like, there's one person who is a scientist. She's the visionary that does all the research stuff. And every day you go to see her, she'll always be doing the same thing. But what she's doing is researching a way to break the loop. So she knows she's in the loop, but there's nothing she can do because at the end of the day, everything gets erased and goes back to the way it was, except for you. Whoever you are, you don't remember, but you know that you were originally one of the visionaries and you want to break the loop. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to kill the other 8 visionaries all in one day. And then I don't remember mechanically why that is the case, but basically all the other visionaries are like out doing their stuff. There's 8 of them and there are 4 parts in the day so that you can at any point in time, you can like go through certain doors in the world and it will move time forward. So it's one day, but it's broken up into four parts. And if you go to a certain person in the third part of the day, obviously they're going to be doing something different than they were in the first or second or fourth parts. And your goal is to, because there are only four parts in the day and you need to kill eight people, you have to find a way to get two of the eight people in the same place and kill them both four times. So you have to get two of them to meet up four different times at each time of the day.
Interesting.
But the way that you do that is by exploring this world and gathering information about their habits. What are they doing? One great example is like, if you are vibing in the world and checking all the notes and really being careful about like collecting information, you'll find out that two of the visionaries are like having an affair behind the scenes. They don't want anybody else to know. So if you can find these messages that they've been sending to each other, you can find out that they meet up once a day at a certain time. But when you find that out, you go there and the room that they're in is locked and there are people all around the building guarding it. So it's not as simple as, oh, they meet up, I'll just go in and kill them.
Right.
Now a different puzzle is happening. So the first puzzle is figuring out what you even need to do.
Yeah.
And the way that you do that is baked into the world. It's really, really interesting to see, like, and of course everything goes back to the way it was when you reset the loop. So, but you still have all that information that you've retained. So now you're like, okay, the next day I'm going to try a different approach and see, how do I get the combination to this door so I can unlock it and get in there where they are? Or can I do something else, like put poisonous gas in the room so I don't even need to go in there or whatever? And there's lots of really interesting twists on all the different visionaries, because they're all basically egomaniacs who are all doing weird, like billionaire stuff. Like the lady that does all the research for them clones herself because no one else is smart enough to help her with her research. So it's, you don't know which one is the real her, and she's like super paranoid. So first of all, the base is locked down out in the middle of like this Arctic shelf that's hard to even get to. And then when you get in there, it's locked down.
I actually did kill her,
And then when you get in there, you don't know which one's the real her, because there's like 30 versions of her all arguing with each other. And it's, so you have to really dig through the world and look at every little detail to even know how to progress. But the game still does a great job of communicating what you've learned to you in like a concise way so you can reference it back. And it's just really, it's fascinating how they've made such a intricate world where every little detail can give you some insight into something else. And manipulating that and then like coming back the same day and trying something different and getting a totally different result, or like showing up and there's a safe that was robbed by somebody else at like midday. Well, you're like, oh, I'll just go in the morning. And I need to find the code, but it won't have been robbed yet. So there's just things changing all the time. And it's really, really interesting. It's all based on just the world itself. Like it's all just baked into the place that you're in. And I've never seen a game put that much emphasis on the character's direct involvement with the actual static world, not even the people so much as the objects in the world. Like it's a great example of that to me. And awesome. I don't think any other game has really done that. So I think it's a really interesting example of level design.
Those are good points. And I don't think I was appreciating the game on the scale that you were, or the scale that I should
have. Well, you were,
but
yeah. And I'm not even,
you're probably anticipating something kind of different.
No, I was going in fully, fully knew, what I was super enticed by the concept of this death loop and all the things that Jared was saying. But for me, it just got a little monotonous when the loop would start over again.
And it then, can be frustrating if you don't know how to move forward, or if you're like, okay, I'm getting seven of them, but I have no idea how to get the last one in a place that I can get to them.
And the entire time, there's another character that has the strange trait that you do of knowing, of remembering what you did the previous day, which is the same day you're experiencing now. And they're actually trying to kill you.
She's one of the visionaries. All the visionaries know you exist, but they're so focused on their own dumb stuff that they're basically ignoring you. She has dedicated the day to killing you. And so
she remembers what you do.
She knows that you're breaking the loop, and she's trying to stop you from breaking the loop. But the problem is she's still in the loop.
And doesn't she have an AI?
She has to start over.
Doesn't she have an AI learning based on your behavior?
So it's not necessarily that she's learning so much as she is capitalizing on what you do. Mm-hmm. So if you do a series of events differently one day, then she will be aware of that. Or like the safe that I was talking about earlier that was robbed. Mm-hmm. She's the one who robs it because she doesn't want you to get the information inside. I see. So she is trying to sabotage your progress.
Isn't the safe in your home?
It's
is that the scene where it's like a trap?
Man, spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers. It is.
Okay.
But yeah, she's a really interesting foil in there. But like, she appears randomly, but where she appears and like the story progresses as you two are interacting with each other. Because there are lots of cutscenes where she tries to assassinate you and like you get a moment to like ask her what's going on because you don't remember why you're there or why you did this in the first place. Or you just wake up and you've written on your arm, break the loop, and that's all you know. Wow. So yeah, it's got a lot of really interesting elements that come together in there. And all of it is based around just nitpicking this world apart. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's super cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so Ryan, you still have one left?
No, Talon's next.
Talon, you still have one left?
And then you have your number three?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My number three is Dark Souls.
Okay. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah. So I feel like I'd be doing
that one off your list. Yeah.
Everyone a disservice if I didn't talk about the incredible world that Dark Souls has built. Specifically this first one.
The first one. And in the third one, the creator said that he wished he had made the design closer to Dark Souls. When he had finished that game, he went back and said, I wish I made it more like Dark Souls 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it says so much about that game. It's like, it's not just Dark Souls, but it is an actual design philosophy that has obviously existed before Dark Souls, but it became popularized. And the shorthand for it is that it's like a Souls-like level design.
Yeah.
Literally means like, you are exploring these places that are very unfamiliar to you and you get so lost and you have no idea where you are because you're just out exploring. Right. And then all of a sudden you'll open a door or you'll lower a ladder or something will happen. And all of a sudden you're back at the hub world and now you don't have to take that loop anymore. Yeah. And the way that it organically introduces these shortcuts gives you such a sense of accomplishment in just exploring this world. Yeah. Like, that to me is what makes Souls so cool.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And especially because it's like you might have zero flasks left and you.
Which is how you heal in the game. Correct. It's like essentially potions.
Right.
You're out of heals.
You're out of heals.
Which is very dangerous.
You got very low health. You just beat this crazy looking dude or whatever. And it's like if I push just a little bit further, there might be a bonfire.
Or a shortcut.
Or a shortcut. And you take the elevator and it leads you back to Firelink Shrine. And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And then it's like you can go and you heal and then you can go back and explore by taking the elevator back up. It's just like this perfect almost loop of just enough to get you further into the world. But it's like, even if you start at Firelink Shrine, which is like your main hub, I guess, or whatever, but it's like there's stairs going up and there's stairs going down.
Yeah.
And it's like the higher you go, the like, you know, the more elevation you get, you explore a castle and then it's like you go further down, you're just going to go underground.
There's even like two staircases down from the hub. You can go down to like the catacombs or you can go down into, I can't really get the name right. It's like New Londo and...
Yeah, it's New Londo. On Orlando is
castle. Which is, backwards.
Right, yeah.
You would think the big fancy city would be New Londo.
Well, but the thing is like you often have no idea where you're going until you're there.
Right. Yeah.
Which is what I think, that's what I was talking about when I was saying like, you think you're so far from where you started.
Right.
You think you've gone in the opposite direction. And somehow, without you realizing it, you've looped back to the shrine.
Right.
And now you're like, what?
Yeah.
That's where I am? And all of a sudden, it's so satisfying when you have that moment of like, oh, I understand the entire route I just took just from seeing where I came out.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden, instantly, this part of the map is filled in for
There's no load screens. The whole world is actually connected. Yes. It's not an illusion.
That's why when you start the game, it takes 3 hours to load.
That's right. But it's crazy because it's like you could be standing like on a cliffside that you've spent 3 hours to get to and look down and you can see Firelink Shrine. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, that's just where I came from.
Yeah. It's hard to replicate that feeling.
Yes, absolutely. But it's cohesive and it makes sense.
The one that I'd never understood to this day, and even when I played it recently, mm-hmm. you go down to the catacombs, right? You start off, if you pick your gift, you can get that key really early to open up that one lock right before you start going into New Londo. You know, you can open that gate.
Oh, right, to the Drakes.
And then you start going down into the swamp.
I don't remember that part.
What's it called?
Blighttown.
Mm-hmm. The transition from that gate from New Londo, and then you're out in this like canyon area with mm-hmm. this dead dragon, mm-hmm. and you're trying to like look around the map and see how it's connected. Mm-hmm. It's very confusing. Hmm. Go back there and look.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to now.
And be like, how did I get here when I was just there? And it's not like an elevator or anything.
Right.
Like you took an elevator down, way down to get to New Londo.
Yeah.
You open up that gate, you go down this short stairway,
right.
and you're in this like entirely different environment, and you can't see how you got from where you were.
Yeah.
How long and how bad does a blight have to be before your town is named after Blight Town. It?
I will say,
generations we've been sick with this thing.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that's nice about Dark Souls is when you go to a new environment, it's a completely new environment with new enemies and like a new infrastructure. You know what I mean? It's like it feels,
each area is iconic.
Yeah. It does feel like no one has ever heard of Torchlight though. Like nothing is ever lit in that game.
Oh no.
Except bonfires.
Oh, wow.
There's plenty.
I just mean it's a very dark game in general. Yeah. No matter where you go, like Dark Souls. So
the souls are dark.
Oh. Somebody hear
it
all these.
I mean, it definitely has a different vibe if you go up or you go down.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I think aesthetically is very clear where you are. Like mm-hmm. Bloodborne is very similar in the sense that everything is dark, everything is falling apart, mm-hmm. and everything feels like it's barely holding together, mm-hmm. but you still can tell exactly where you are just from a couple seconds of looking around.
But I think Dark Souls does a better job at like
conveying visually.
Yeah, like every area looks so different.
Right.
Bloodborne, a lot of the areas.
Dark blue, grays, blacks.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just has reds, a tone. Cause it just has a style to it.
Right.
And all Souls games have a similar style.
Yeah. Do you, any other?
No, I just think it's a beautifully crafted world.
Yeah.
And now
I just feel like they're neat.
It's
just Dark Souls 2 is like the map is like you've got your hub world and you have all these different paths and they all just go in straight lines.
Right, yes.
And each one is a totally different path.
Yeah.
And you just fast travel back. And Dark Souls 1, you get your fast travel after beating like
Smog and Ornstein,
which if it's your first playthrough, that's a lot of hours. That's a lot of hours. Yeah. If you're very used to Dark Souls, it's pretty early in the game.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the task to fight the four mega bosses of the game that unlocks your mega boss fight at the end.
Yeah.
But that's when they unlock fast travel, which is like, that seems like a Capcom thing to do.
Yeah.
Like I'm like,
they should have put a paywall, you know, $1.99.
That's what I'm saying. You try to open the door. It's like, you got $2.
Yeah.
Give it.
You're
to
not going this way, bud.
What's his name? The dude with the flesh mustache that pops out of this.
Sorry? Oh my gosh, yeah, that's going to drive me nuts.
Sorry?
Yeah.
His what?
Flesh mustache.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Flesh mustache, yeah.
You know how do you shave about? That?
Man, what is his name? That's going to drive me nuts now.
I don't know.
You defeat one of the bosses. Ugh, you defeat either...
I got to look it up.
I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be you defeat the gargoyles first, right? Mm-hmm. Then you go back to the hub world. And you go to that one little area on the way to the catacombs that has a little bit of water in it. Mm-hmm. And you just hear like something groan.
Frant.
Yeah. And
that sounds like the name of someone with a flesh mustache.
It's just like a neck Framped. That pops up out of the super long neck, pops out of the darkness abyss of this hole.
Yeah.
And it's just this face. And there's like a YouTube video of like the guy saying it. It's just like, oh! What is that? And the dude's framed is trying to give you important context information, but you're too
freaked
busy
out.
Freaking out over his face while he's talking.
Yeah. And that's another thing about the game is it's just like, because of where it's at, you're like, there's probably something there, right? Yeah. and then you're exploring, and then you just hear some like rambling or something like that, and you go, and it's that guy.
Yeah, he comes out like, after you defeat Quailag.
Just more.
Yeah.
Go beat more bosses.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. It's great.
So, go ahead, man.
What's it's a good game.
I want to talk about Resident Evil 7 and 8.
No, pick one.
7 and 8. Feels like a cohesive, like it almost feels like whole, like one whole game.
Yeah. It's not. It's two different games.
And there's so
you can tell by the numbers.
So closely designed. There's no way it's a different team making these games, right?
1000%.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're all over your mic.
I love it.
You're rapidly tapping. You're gonna have to do another take of this.
Okay. I want to talk about Resident Evil 7 and 8.
Oh, those are two different games.
Which you know,
and I feel like they're one cohesive game. Like
you feel just, like they have a similar enough design philosophy that you're talking about the same elements when you talk about
when them. I talk about when I praise one game, it's the same praises of the other game. I call it Resident Evil Sate.
I'll allow it. Sate. Mm-hmm.
But that makes it sound like 6 and 8.
Are you sated when you play it?
Sevt.
No, right, only, you're only going downhill.
Yeah.
These are only worse.
It's fine by me. You go fast when you go downhill.
It's going downhill faster.
Such great level design. Mm-hmm. There's never a point in the game where I'm like looking around in an area and I'm like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Everything's like, when you, I didn't even notice it. I only noticed it on New Game Plus. When you first start off, you play as this guy named Ethan. You're trying to find your daughter, Rose, who just got kidnapped by what seems like the military. They just killed your wife. They stole your baby. Now, they also kidnapped you, but then the van wrecked that you're being transported in, and you're able to get out of this wreckage, and everyone else
this is seven?
Dead.
Eight.
This
eight.
Is actually eight. Yeah. I'm actually just straight talking into eight, because I played it recently.
Yeah.
So it's what's fresh in my mind. But so on eight, you get out in the, you're like rambling through the snow, and you get up on this cliff edge, and if you actually take the time to look out on the cliff edge, you can see the whole map of Resident Evil 8 before you even know it. You can see, it's like...
That's very cool.
It's like Zelda Ocarina of Time when you get out to Hyrule Field, and you can see the... It's what I immediately thought of. You can see the mountain, you can see...
Death Mountain and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like. You can see the castle you're about to go to. You can see the lake area, and then like the factory area that you go to. So that was really neat, but I didn't notice it till New Game Plus.
Yeah. Right. Cause you don't know what you're getting into until you've already been there. Yeah. So.
But I, so that I just like, cool. I took like a minute to like absorb all that scenery. Yeah. I was like, oh,
wow.
That's very Souls-ish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
Resident Evil 7, I think Resident Evil 8 is an improvement on 7, in every way.
Well, it should be the numbers higher. So.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Did you play the demo for Resident Evil 7 before it came out?
Yeah, because you and I talked about it.
Yeah, we and like, it was like really spooky.
Scary, dude.
And scary.
Is that the one that got the demo that got deleted that everyone was like, this
no, that's
is the
PT.
PT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the game when it came out had a kind of a different vibe than the demo, at least when you got like into the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't that scary anymore or intense. But... Eight, the level design in that one is so great. I beat both. I didn't beat the DLC for 7.
Yeah.
But I beat the DLC for 8.
I
didn't. Because I was just so compelled by the story, which is rare for me.
Yeah.
Tell me more about the level design.
The mini-map, like, highlights buildings like blue or red. If it's blue, you've got all the discoverable things you can get there, all the loot.
Oh, this is already.
Yeah.
This helps Ryan's OCD.
Yes, collecting which is what I'm about to get into. And there's a room you can't get back into once you get to a certain point. And that bugged me because it was forever red on my mini map. Am I, what am I doing?
You're wobbling your mic. What did I say about your hands? Put them in your pocket.
Back in the holes.
So there's a room on my mini-map that's just forever red because you can't go back to that map, and it's the only red room in the entire game, which is like the whole reason I did New Game Plus was to make that room blue, right?
Come here, you stupid room!
Yeah, so I'm curious as to what I missed.
Yeah.
But the level design is so great that they when you beat the game, you unlock a like mission mode where you can play as different characters, and you're playing. What? Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yes. I'm it is a score based, like time based game where you're trying to rack up a combo. So if you don't kill an enemy in a certain amount of time, your combo goes back to zero. So you, if you defeat every enemy in a combo, you have a huge score and you get like a double S rank. And that gives you more points to unlock. Are these
specified rooms in the world?
Or it is a like section of the map you just played in the single player campaign that is kind of walled off in certain ways to make a path.
Right.
And you'll even do the same rooms over again with a different path this time. And you have to learn where these enemies spawn so you can quickly turn and kill them because you know they're going to spawn there. So the first time you play it, there's no way you're going to get a double S rank, but you're going to learn where those enemies spawn. You're going to learn the effective route. You're going to learn that the power-up that you thought you should be grabbing, you don't need to grab because it's a time waster. To get a double S rank, don't even pick up that upgrade.
Interesting.
You want to just skip that. Or if you can grab the upgrade, you need to make sure you don't kill an enemy at a certain time. Because you have to kill an enemy every so often, right? So you want to kill.
So you want to space those kills out. Yes,
space your kills out so that you can grab the power up. And after you grab the power up, you kill the enemy.
Interesting.
And then you keep moving. So, and then it has.
It's
like
really interesting that the level design is working on two different levels, even in a single player context. Yes. Like, I think that's really
the
impressive.
The exploration is crazy good. I wasn't ready to move on from the areas I was moving on from because I wanted to stay in these areas. Like the castle you go to. I was like, oh man, I have to go to a new area. Like that's exciting, but man, I wanted to keep getting at this castle.
Show me more stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way you interact with each environment, it's like the Tomb Raider game you're talking about came out in 2013 where like everything feels natural. It doesn't feel like it was designed.
Right.
It just feels like this world happened.
It's just somebody lives here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why that's there because that person reads that book at night.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And like at the very beginning you have to survive as long as you can against a wave of werewolves that are coming at you and you're running around these buildings that are decrepit and looking in drawers for ammo as they're like coming at you. And it is intense. And you're like grabbing like dressers to put in front of doors to buy yourself time to look through cabinets and crap for one bullet to shoot something in the head. And while you're also like, you can block to minimize the damage and you're just like shoving werewolves off of you.
Yeah.
And then you're barely alive, and then this big giant werewolf comes down with this giant hammer. And you're like, what am I supposed to do? Man.
Start over and do better.
So crazy. So awesome.
It's cool that the world is laid out in a way that like it is really fun to explore, but at the same time, it functions so well in like allowing you options for buying yourself time in that like as a survival game. It's really smart of them to be able to like line that up and then give you the resources so like the loop can persist in the sense that you're like, okay, I'm out of ammo, but I can buy myself some time to look for some, which I know there'll be some somewhere if I can. So it creates like kind of a combat puzzle. I know Resident Evil has a lot of just normal puzzles that are not combat related in them, but it's really cool to see them bring that through line into the combat itself where you're having to think of ways to stall in a survival game. Sounds like a really cool mechanic to me.
Yeah.
And the environment is helping you to do that is even cooler.
And it's got a good mix of threats that you can fight and threats you need to run from.
Yeah.
The freaking baby scene.
Dude. Because it's just like immediately going to this mansion.
Yeah. And you see it's house. Yeah. You're like, I do not want to run into that thing again. And then you see the umbilical cord stretched across the floor. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Once you go to this house, you haven't played it yet, have you?
No, I think this will probably be my homie work because Ryan has piqued my interest.
Yeah. You go into this house, it takes all your weapons away and you have to survive.
Yeah.
And it's. Yeah, it totally flips the script on the game. You've been just like
you are uncomfortable playing this section of the game.
Yeah,
you are uncomfy.
Yeah.
And then the doll fight that quickly follows that.
Yeah,
I beat it in like 2 seconds.
Yeah. It's kind of like the point, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, get out of here. Yeah. I just fought a baby.
We are so sorry we made you experience the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Have exactly. this doll fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You fight that doll in the mission based thing.
As oh, like you do? Oh, okay.
And you can play as the lady. You'll really? You'll unlock her as a character.
Interesting.
And she has a move. You remember the cutscene where she throws the vanity? You're like peeking at her through a mm-hmm. window and she yeah. throws the vanity.
Yeah.
They have that as a weapon. You just throw a vanity. And you upgrade the vanity.
No See, way.
Yeah.
One of the things I like so much about the later Resident Evil games, particularly, uh-huh. and they did this earlier as well, but like the more you play the game, especially like New Game Plus,
mm-hmm.
they take their own game less and less seriously yeah. to the point
have,
where it's like
New Game Plus, I have infinite ammo on my grenade launcher.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. It's just like, okay.
Just what I want.
What is this game that was all about tension and buying time and using every resource? Yeah. What would it feel like if I had infinite grenades and a grenade launcher?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
who would even think
yeah.
to like flip the script?
I feel like that's a that good degree. Callback to old school Capcom.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where you're running around as like yeah. a dude made of tofu. Like,
right.
I yes, remember in exactly. is it in two it's in two. The police station where you're checking out the film development room? Mm-hmm. There's a desk or something. With a bunch of papers on it, you look at it, it's like, there's so many papers here. There's yeah. no way to tell what's what or something like that.
Right.
If you check it 96 times,
is it 96
you'll get a photo of the development team.
Yeah.
And I remember checking it over and over again, not because I really cared, but right. I just wanted to see if it were true.
Right.
And I remember my mom being like, babe, what are you doing? You're just like me just sitting here as an 8-year-old just pressing A right. over and over again.
Yeah.
And I was
learning
like,
to read.
There's an Easter egg. When you get a picture of the dev team, she didn't even, yeah. she was like,
but it's just,
why did I
oh,
ask?
Say no more, son.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, of course. Why wouldn't you check it 96 right. times then?
Yeah.
If you get to see a photo yeah. of some people who worked on the yeah. game.
That's right. Well, it's just like when I beat Onimusha in 2.5 hours, the unlockable was Samunosuke now wears a panda suit.
Yeah.
And it's like, why?
Okay, no I guess. Why. Yeah, because we know that at this point you're not in it for the thrill yeah,
right.
of adventure,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
right.
So, yeah. It's really, but I really love the way, like, because that also really fundamentally changes the way that you're engaging with the environment
mm-hmm.
to not have to, like, be hiding and stalling and moving stuff around or whatever. You're just like a machine of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see them have so many layers to the ways in which you have to interact with yeah. the environment. Like,
yeah.
very smart.
The,
very
the
cool.
mini map is just great for, like, you'll pull it up and you'll be like, okay, I need to get to this point and I've got this much ammo left and I know this enemy is patrolling this area. How can I, what's the fastest route there? The mini map is just great for being able to navigate that. It's really yeah. easy to navigate.
That's a blessing.
Yeah. So
I feel like mini maps are an often overlooked tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually
underutilized.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. And I want to briefly mention.
Okay, go ahead.
Banjo-Kazooie.
Of
only
course.
Because we've talked about it in depth on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
That level design is fantastic. Banjo-Tooie.
Not so much. Talk about C.
Mm-hmm. Me.
Good game.
I listened to a like 30-minute video on a guy who was explaining, it's actually longer than 30 minutes. He's explaining why he loves the level design of Banjo-Tooie. It was an interesting take, and it made me think, maybe I should give it another try, but we'll see.
Okay.
I'm going to try it.
Mm.
I think I can stream it, so. Mm.
I actually learned that I almost beat it. I thought I'd got like halfway through it, and I realized I only had like one more level to go.
I guess that nice. Makes sense for yeah. how but quickly you can beat Banjo.
Banjo-Kazooie, you got Clanker's Cavern, which is like the only underworld water mm-hmm. world that mm-hmm. I'm like excited to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, Jabba Jabba's Belly in Ocarina of Time is pretty great, so I like that one.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's underwater. It's underwater.
I think you mean the water
don't
temple.
Like the water temple. Don't like the water temple.
Yeah, when you started talking, I thought you were going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Reading the walkthrough as a kid for how to beat the water temple, I was like, how would I know this? How would anyone know
yeah,
this?
Yeah, pretty bonkers.
These puzzles
yeah.
don't make any sense.
That's
yeah.
right.
Rusty Bucket Bay.
Yep. Clockwoods.
Clockwoods.
Mm. Solid.
Such good levels.
All good Indeed. Levels.
We
love all good levels.
I think there was another shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out. If we're doing honorable mentions, Baldur's Gate 3.
Baldur's Gate 3. Dark Souls was another one of my
Baldur's
games.
Gate 3, except for Part 2.
I thought Part 2 was great.
I haven't been to part two yet.
That's the problem. You need to be in part two, and then we can come back and talk about it. Okay,
fair enough. That's why I didn't put it on my list.
Part one. Perfect.
Okay.
Part three. Part two, though.
Bro. Meh.
That is frustrating.
I definitely see like where it's frustrating, but I really liked Act Two.
Maybe we'll talk about that in
our Worlds episode. It may be better now that it's been patched so much, but constantly.
Well, I played it early.
Well, I know. Me too. And it just got frustrating, dude. Yeah. You're like fighting fog for no reason.
The characters in two, though, man. You got the doctor and the bartender and the
spoilers,
banker.
Spoilers.
And... What?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either, and I don't want to.
Oh, right.
The town.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Where they...
And then the hub area where you go, the inn that's like shielded, and then you go underneath it, and there's like a little dungeon under there. You had no idea.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. And all the gnomes are jumping on trampolines with the fireworks.
Am I awake or dreaming right now? This feels like a conversation I should be waking up from.
Oh, okay. Well, you have to watch part. You have to play part two, dude.
Gnomes with the fireworks jumping on trampolines.
Yeah. You don't remember that?
Okay, so it's not just me.
It's not. Do I only not remember it super vividly?
Okay.
But it's my favorite part of Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay. Well, if you say so. Well, you'll have to play part two. Find out.
I guess so. Okay. Those are my picks.
Yeah. Mine too.
All good choices.
If you guys have...
Can't believe I didn't think of Untitled.
I am super interested to hear people's suggestions.
Yeah, on their favorite.
One that I really wanted to mention, but I felt like I just couldn't justify it, is Red Faction Armageddon. Mm-hmm. Because when you're dealing with the destructible environments and stuff...
Yeah,
The last one, the most recent one.
Yeah, although I do like
Factions. I'll say Red Faction Remastered.
Remastered.
I forgot about that. Which is the worst pun on remastered I've ever heard. They do such a good job of using the destructibility to in like a puzzle context of like the challenges where you have to destroy buildings using only a certain resource or whatever.
Yeah,
and like.
I never played that one.
I never get tired of blowing stuff up in that game. And the multiplayer was also incredible. But moving around in the world to get from one point to the other is just awful. Just an absolute slog. There's nothing between each point of interest to even look at. It's just an empty wasteland.
And I love the original Red Faction games.
Oh, man.
I used to play the crap out of that. And I actually like the multiplayer.
Yeah, we would just see how far we could dig.
Yeah.
You just run the RAM out, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Multiplayer maps, Uncharted 2. I know you're not a big fan of the combat in Uncharted 2.
And
but I think the multiplayer maps really, because you just, the elevation, just being able to like parkour up onto like higher parts of the level, just be able to like snipe down. I was like, man, if the main game, you try to play the game like you do in the multiplayer, and I feel like this would be so much more fun if I could play like this in the actual game, and you can't. So, but I did have a ton of fun playing that, and I do think they utilized all of that.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey has the worst world design I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my gosh, dude.
We should do worst as a separate episode, because I feel like trying to find the best, there were so many I ran into.
But I'll have
like,
to play them to justify my reasons.
No, it's fine. Just go on YouTube.
Yeah,
I won't tell. No one will be able to notice.
Yeah. But anyways, tell us your suggestions.
Yes, please let us know what you guys think.
Email them at didisavepodcast@gmail.com or put them in the comments. If you're watching this on YouTube, put them in the comments.
Absolutely. Indeed. You can hit us up on Blue Sky at Did I Save Podcast. If you want to reach us that way, let us know what your thoughts are. We're on TikTok, of course. Watch our shorts. Let us know what you think.
Indeed.
Watch us on YouTube for the context. We'll have some video clips of all the stuff we talk about in there. It's very nice. Probably a longer version, typically. We leave a few little bonus segments in there for the long formers. Otherwise, check us out on any podcast platform where you get your podcasts, and be sure to give us a 5-star review because it helps with visibility.
And thank you, Sam Webster, for the use of,
most importantly,
the music we use for intro and outro. We also need to remind you to save your game.
Oh, I was going to say, don't forget to save.
Don't forget to save.
You know, you phrase it however
I you need want. You to say it first.
You're the host.
Okay.
Don't forget to save.
To save, yeah. Obviously, I struggle with the intro.
The way games change and the way games change us.
Yeah. I know it's easy. And I know it.
Say the way games change and then add us on the second time you say it.
The way games change. And then I just say that again. But then I just add. The way games
change us.
Yeah. Us?
That's right.
Or me or you.
Do I need to add
together?
Past, future, present?
No, that's up to you. It's your own thing, man.
So I'm going to say the way games change and the way games change us.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then go into what?
And then today we're going to talk about.
I said
the episode number. You don't have to do that. If you
know, but what episode number are we on?
Episode 9 is what episode this one
nine?
Will be.
Okay. Episode 9.
Welcome really? To episode great. 9 of Did Thought I Save?
Probably like on 10.
Well, that's even with the first broken up. So if you count the first 5 episodes,
yeah, I'm talking about,
we're not even.
Yeah, I'm talking about. It feels like with those first 5 broken up, we should be further.
Yeah.
Okay, it's already recording.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, hello then.
Perfect.
Nailed it. It's never perfect when you do it.
No.
No. No shade, Ryan.
That's amazing.